Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
It is Tuesday, so that means open forum. I am Cy Kellett, your host. You are listening to Catholic Answers Live, and today we take any question you've got on the life or the faith or the history of the Catholic Church. Maybe there's something about the sacraments that you've always wanted straightened out, or why do we have a hierarchy, or something about the Bible or the saints? All those questions are welcome on open forum. And what is more, you don't have to be Catholic to call. Anyone is welcome to call, whether Catholic or not, 888-318-7884. Whether you want to know for yourself or whether there's someone you'd like some help explaining something to, we welcome your call, 888-318-7884. Our guest this hour is Colin Donovan, Vice President for Theology at EWTN. Colin has a licentiate in Sacred Theology from the Pontifical University of Thomas Aquinas, also known as the Angelicum in Rome. He hosts the Friday edition of Open Line on EWTN Global Catholic Radio and is a member of the monthly EWTN Theology Roundtable. Colin Donovan, thank you very much for being with us today.
Always good to be here, Cy.
And the Angelicum, our chaplain went to the Angelicum. Do you happen to know Father Hugh Barber? Were you guys there at the same time?
That I don't know. I was there from 87 to 91, and of course you can be in different courses, specializations, and
Is it a big place? Are there?
No, it's physically not very big at all. It's basically buildings around a square, a little garden in the center, and I don't know how many classrooms altogether. But it's really quite small. It's amazing, and yet they can have 800, 900, 1,000 students there at a time.
Wow! And they come from all over the world.
They do a lot of lay people, but I would say religious, both priests and male and female religious sent there by superiors, by bishops. Very often to get the graduate education, as well as the undergraduate, the bachelor's in sacred theology. But a lot of grad students getting their licentiates and doctorates.
Uh-huh. Again, our number, 888-318-7884, Colin Donovan, our guest. And any question you have on the Catholic Church, what we believe, what we do, why we believe those things, why we do those things, they're all welcome. 888-31-TRUTH, if you prefer the number that way. I imagine once you've lived in Rome, then everybody, whenever they're going, where should I go to eat? Where's the good spot? Do you have spots that you recommend?
One of my favorite, and my wife's as well, we went there on our honeymoon, La Vittoria, which is near the Vatican. And probably any of your fellows there who have gone to Rome have probably eaten there. It's a hangout for the Swiss Guards, so you very often will see them there. And
you're safe.
Not in their uniforms or with their halberds, however, so you're safe.
But those guys are real security guards. They're real security people, police officers. They're not fooling around.
More than that, they have to be veterans of the Swiss Army to get accepted into the Swiss Guard.
Yep. Colin, every single line is already full. People want to talk to you. How about we go to calls?
Fine by me. Let's go.
All right. We start with Victor in Greenville, North Carolina, watching on YouTube. Thanks for watching on YouTube. Victor, you're on with Colin Donovan. Your question, please.
Thanks for taking my call.
Happy to.
Oh, you're welcome.
So my question is about the philosophical view of determinism. Mm-hmm. Do people who hold that view, do they believe that we have the ability to choose? Because I talked to one person who holds that view, and he said that we have the ability to choose. But when I asked him that, do we have the freedom to make those choices if we have multiple options, and he couldn't answer that.
Yeah, I think you probably are going to find a lot of views out there. I think, first of all, it's a very naturalistic perspective philosophically, materialistic, naturalistic, in that you could say our genes, our genetics, our socialization, all the things that a psychologist or anthropologist would look at anyway as far as helping to order behavior in particular societies, that all of these work together so that in the end, you can come up with two positions. that we either we have a choice or that we don't have a choice. And sometimes they point to physics and the uncertainty principle to sort of suggest that even so-called free will is simply just the postulation of, you know, the variables in the physics that would allow on one occasion in identical circumstances that you could, one person could go one way, one could go the other. So there's a lot of explanations that are used to try to explain things like human consciousness and decision making. Today, there, of course, we're learning more and more about the genetic basis of behavior and the epigenetics, which is, you might say, passing down the stress of one generation to another in a sort of a not in the chromosomes per se, but in the material that wraps them, so that certain genes get amplified or other genes don't get expressed as well, and the effects that would have on behavior. We do get those material explanations for things. But, of course, the not just the Christian, but you would say even the pagan Greek, the Aristotelian and the Platonic view of this would be that, no, man is a spiritual creature, and that we understand and we know that. And part of that spirituality is precisely that we are not determined by all of that. We are bodily creatures with all the defects of our bodies, of our genetic predispositions, of our familial and social predispositions, what we've learned from culture and family. But in the end, we are not predetermined to particular choices as a result of that. And, of course, the most remarkable thing of all is grace, because if we were predetermined, I don't think you would easily explain the remarkable conversions of people who go from one moment with a very predetermined, sinful, addictive, or whatever life, and in an instant they're changed and they overcome all of that in one fell stroke. That's not certainly common or the normal way, but it happens. And that's because we're spiritual creatures. And not only does our spirit have the power to overcome simply material determinants, but also with the grace and the help of God, we have even more power and more ability to do that.
Okay, Victor?
Yeah. So basically, determinism is similar to fatalism, because in fatalism, you can't overcome whatever that's determined your decision.
I think in some views of it, that's true. And in other views, they look even for natural explanations for free will, but in quotes, perhaps.
Victor, thanks very much for the call. We will have to leave it there. We go now to Tim on the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, listening on Barriga Radio. Tim, you are on with Colin Donovan. Your question, please.
Hi there. Thanks for having me on. I've got a question for Colin, but first I have a question for you, Cy.
Oh, okay.
I recently read your book Ad Limina, the sort of sci-fi Catholic book.
Yes.
And I really liked it, and I want to know, when are you coming out with a sequel?
I have no idea. I don't know if I will. But thank you for those very kind words. You are one of four people who have read that book, and two out of the four enjoyed it. So I appreciate that. Tim, what's your question for Colin? Go ahead.
Well, keep up the good work. I just want to encourage you. We need more Catholic fiction writers.
Thank you.
But my question has to do with the Mass, and actually the question of the SSPX, the schismatic group, the traditionalist group. I met an interesting guy this weekend at Mass who's actually from Germany, and he was talking about how the German bishops have agreed to start giving communion to Protestants during Mass. And this guy was basically saying when he goes home, there's no parish in his diocese that he feels comfortable going to because of this abuse of the Eucharist. And so my question is, in that case, would it be illicit to say, well, I'm just going to go to an SSPX chapel, knowing about the whole schism and stuff, but when you have a bishop doing an obviously heretical act, I mean, I kind of felt for the guy. What other choice does he have? Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to know, and I've heard different opinions, I just wanted to hear what you had to say about that.
Sure. Well, I mean, they're not schismatic. Pope Benedict and Pope Francis together took care of that in terms of what their status is, and I think the church remains open to their full regularization. I would say the biggest obstacle canonically and morally is that there's still valid priests and bishops who are suspended from the use of their faculties. Now, certain exceptions were made for the Year of Mercy and with regard to abortion and other things that perdures after the Year of Mercy. You know, so I think clearly there is a certain openness on the part of the Holy See to the plight of people who find themselves in the situation. That could be accorded tolerance, and in moral theology, tolerance is very often an adequate excuse. I would say excuse and not a reason, because still there is the validity, but the illicitness of their masses. But you can also have perhaps what's called the moral impossibility. You could have the physical impossibility. You could be in a place where there is no other place where you can go to Mass and receive communion, and moral impossibility could free you to do that, or physical impossibility. And there could also be moral impossibility there. But I think it takes an extreme case, and it's a case of excusing what would otherwise be illicit because of a certain moral pressure that the person experiences. And I think for the laity who would find themselves in a situation where the Mass is especially questionable, thanks be to God, this is not as frequent as it was in the 70s and 80s, that you actually wondered whether the Mass was valid when it was over because of the matter used or the form used or whatever. That problem seems more infrequent today, but people can find reasons why it is morally difficult for them to fulfill their Sunday obligation in their particular circumstances. So not by way of, you know, choosing it as a lawful way, but by excuse as to why you would do it in particular circumstances. And then that would bring it to confessional, of course, and where the validity of that judgment of conscience would have to be judged. And, of course, we're all about judgments of conscience today, so we would hope that there'd be a certain certain patience there, too.
Tim, does that work for you?
Yeah, that's helpful. Thanks. I pray we won't have to have to make these kind of decisions, but sometimes you never know the way things are going. But that's It's helpful to know there are some conscious sort of protections for Catholics who are in tough spots.
Right, yeah.
All right, Tim. Thanks very much, and thanks for mentioning my book. It occurs to me that maybe nobody knows what you're talking about, but I wrote a science fiction book years ago called Ad Limina, and it's about a Catholic bishop in space. I believe it's the only book out there about a Catholic. But we need one. We needed one, clearly, so I wrote it. 888-31-TRUTH is our number, 888-318-7884. Colin Donovan is our guest. We have to take a quick break, but when we come back, more Open Forum on Catholic Answers Live right after this.
Hello, my friends. This is Christopher Check, president of Catholic Answers. Did you know that Catholic Answer speakers, including yours truly, travel all over the globe speaking at conferences, parish events, high schools, and colleges? If you would like to bring a Catholic Answer speaker to your neck of the woods, visit CatholicAnswerSpeakers.com. That's CatholicAnswerSpeakers.com. We look forward to seeing you.
Can you trust the basis of the Christian faith? The Christian faith is under constant attack today in numerous ways, but the attack that does the most damage is the one that asks a deceptively simple question. What if your faith is based on a myth? The skeptics come with arguments to cast doubt in numerous ways, often attacking the reliability of the New Testament and the Gospels. And the sad news is that most people don't know how to answer these charges. The good news is that there are answers to each and every one of them. Good, solid answers. That's why Catholic Answers Studios has just released Jimmy Akin's new DVD, The Dawn of Christian History. With his characteristic wit and passion as a master storyteller, Jimmy takes you through an exciting detective story that reveals how history supports the Christian faith. Order your copy of The Dawn of Christian History today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
We struggle with sin. We're distracted in prayer. We find it hard to be loving and easy to be selfish. Thankfully, the Church has given us Lent, the perfect time for reform, of reconversion to God and His will for us. The saints of the Counter-Reformation faced greater obstacles than these, yet they each found the grace to persevere during a tumultuous time in the Church. How can we do the same? Reform yourself is a good place to start. We all need to reform our souls. This Lent, let the saints who reformed the Church show you how. Order your copy of Reform Yourself today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live, open forum, second hour. Tim Staples will be in here with us this hour. Colin Donovan, Vice President for Theology at EWTN, is taking your questions. And I invite you again, if you are not Catholic and you have any kind of question about the Catholic Church, the Catholic faith, Catholic people, we are very happy to take your call. We welcome it, 888-318-7884. Let's go now to Jared in Florence, Alabama, listening on the Catholic Answers Live app. Thanks for downloading the app. Jared, your question for Colin Donovan.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I was asking about, in one of my New Testament classes recently, we have been discussing the apparent conflicts between Peter and Paul concerning circumcision and as a matter of how the Gentiles can be brought into the faith. And the professor was talking about how Peter and Paul actually disagreed on the issue, and Peter was teaching that people needed to be circumcised while Paul didn't believe that. And so I'd never really heard that position before. So is it true that they were taking those different positions? Or I just wondered if maybe you had some insights on that.
Well, I don't think that's true. I think Peter, remember, already had the vision by which the Lord showed that it was being opened up to the Gentiles, and you know, being a good Jew, and he was told to go in and slaughter any of the animals that were in that vision, and no, he would not, because some of them were of the kind that were not clean, and therefore a Jew couldn't eat them. But then he understood that the faith was to be open to the Gentiles, and they wouldn't be held to the Mosaic law on these purely cultic points as opposed to the moral law. But what it is not a point of doctrine, but a point of his behavior. When he was with Jewish people, he sort of downplayed that and started observing the law himself, and he was called on this. So it was a point of prudence, a point of morality, and we know that popes are not impeccable. They're not free of sin. They're not free of prudential errors. One pope will do one thing and the next pope will do another. An incident that always impressed me was when Cyril and Methodius originally evangelized the Rus 1,000 years ago. The liturgy, I believe, was in Greek, and then it was in Slavonic, and then or maybe it was the other way around. It started out in Slavonic, then it went Greek, then it went back, because different popes had different views on what the liturgical language should be. Greek was the biblical language that was, you know, had a pride of place, but the Slavonic was the vulgar or vernacular language. And so back and forth between papacies there for a little while, you had different popes who had different views on these things, sort of like our post-Vatican II debates on Latin versus vernacular and so on. So the pope has the authority to do that, but in Peter's case, he wasn't doing that so much as he was acting, you know, contrary to what he was teaching, and that's what he was called on. So Paul was an apostle. He had the special prerogatives of an apostle, which is that until he died, he could be the conduit for divine revelation, adding to the sacred tradition immediately rather than just receiving it as a deposit as we do, as the bishops since have done. And so he had that prerogative and those prerogatives. So it was, in that sense, he was the equal of Peter, even though he wasn't the pope, and he used that occasion for fraternal correction. That's something that he had a right to do. Not everybody, in my opinion, has a right to give fraternal correction to a pope, but Paul did, and he gave that correction because he thought it was needed. But it was on a moral point, or you could say a prudential point, a disciplinary point, a personal behavior point. It wasn't on a doctrinal point.
Does that make sense to you, Jared?
Yeah, yeah, that's very helpful. I guess I just didn't understand what, because we had just started discussing it, I didn't understand if this was like a common viewpoint that some scholars hold, that they preach different gospels. I didn't know, like, what basis, what, you know, that he was saying that Peter preached a different gospel from. But,
well, I mean, put that in quotes, sure. If you are formally teaching one thing, but you're privately behaving as if what you're teaching publicly is not the truth, yeah, I think from that point of view. But in and of itself, he was teaching by his example. It was a bad example, and that's what he got called on.
Thank you, Jared, very, very much. Lots of calls, so I got to keep moving. We do appreciate your call. Let's go now to Carol Marie in Butte, Montana, listening on Queen of Victory Radio. Carol Marie, you are on with Colin Donovan. Your question, please.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question's in regards to His Eminence, Raymond Leo Cardinal Burke. Gosh, I consider him my spiritual godfather. But in the last 5 years, I think it's been about five, he's gone from the apostolic signatura, which is, I guess, like the second or third highest position in the church, to the prefect of Malta. And now, what is he? Is he under any title besides cardinal? And why? Please tell me why.
Yeah. Well, I don't know why. That's between he and the pope, I think. He is the patron of the Order of Malta, which means he is their spiritual advisor in connection to the church, although as they're an ecclesiastical order as much as they are a military order. He has had different important assignments. He went and he helped get the Archdiocese of Agana, Guam back on the right course, investigating sexual abuse allegations there against the Archbishop. I forget what his latest one was. I think it was Australia or someplace. But, you know, so he is being given those assignments. They're the canonical assignments, certainly related to his competence and his expertise in canon law. But I think beyond that, of course, he's quite well known for being one of the four cardinals who raised the dubia with the pope. I definitely think he had that right to do it, as we were just talking about Paul and Peter. He did that, and, you know, whether the consequences of it, and I think a lot of people surmise the two are not unrelated, you know, that's, again, that's between him and the pope, and I don't want to step into that. But I think he is, I mean, he's a cardinal. He's a voting age. He'll be in the next conclave, and he will continue to do the assignments which the pope gives him. And like any superior, a superior is free to give or not give assignments as he pleases and for whatever reasons. It really doesn't matter whether we think it's just or not. That's the superior's right. In this case, that superior is the pope.
Carol Marie, thank you so much for that call. Again, our number, 888-318-7884. It's open forum with Colin Donovan this hour on Catholic Answers Live. Let's go to Alex in Bangor, Maine, listening on The Presence. Alex, we are short of time, so maybe we'll get the question out and we'll get the answer on the other side of the break.
Okay, yeah, sure. Real quick. Mm-hmm. My question is, why do we always say in the Apostles' Creed when we pray it that Jesus Christ descended into hell? That has always perplexed me.
Okay. Do I have time to into that a little bit?
Yeah, that was very quick, Alex. I'm very impressed with you. You probably have a minute, so give it a shot what you can do in a minute, Colin.
Well, it goes back to the ancient worldview. You know, if you look at both the language of sacred scripture, the Sheol that the Hebrews talked about, the Infernum of the Latins, the lower regions, the Hades of the Greeks, and so on, these all had the sense that we went down into the earth, of course, as our bodies do, and that there we found our reward and punishment. And we see that in the Gospel of Luke with Jesus talking about the rich man and Lazarus, the poor man at his door. And they go to two different destinies, one to the bosom of Abraham and one to hell. Where the bosom of Abraham was not heaven, because Jesus had not yet opened heaven to us. And so that was in the lower regions and in that place where the dead went, the place of the dead. And so that language has carried over, even though it has a certain difficulty for us contemporary moderns because of the association with the damned and the hell of the damned.
Alex, boy, you two really handled that really well. I didn't know you could both go so fast. Alex, thanks for the call and thanks for the quick question. Open forum on Catholic Answers Live means your call is welcome on any aspect of Catholic life or faith or history. 888-318-7884. We'll be right back after this.
Catholic Answers Live.
Wings is the weekly newsletter that's packed with program info, features, and updates of all that's going on at the Global Catholic Network. Just go to EWTN.com/wings. Fill out your name and email address, and you'll start getting your wings every week. When you get yours, send it to all your friends, and they can send it to their friends. And pretty soon, we're covering the whole world with the good news about EWTN. Wings, the weekly newsletter from EWTN, the Global Catholic Network.
We struggle with sin. We're distracted in prayer. We find it hard to be loving and easy to be selfish. Thankfully, the Church has given us Lent, the perfect time for reform, of reconversion to God and His will for us. The saints of the Counter-Reformation faced greater obstacles than these, yet they each found the grace to persevere during a tumultuous time in the Church. How can we do the same? Reform yourself is a good place to start. We all need to reform our souls. This Lent, let the saints who reformed the Church show you how. Order your copy of Reform Yourself today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
The world is changing. The days of picking up a book or popping a DVD or compact disc in the player have given way to the digital age. The good news is that the shop at Catholic.com has joined the digital revolution. Check out the new digital platform at shop.catholic.com, where all of our DVDs, books, and audio products are now available in digital form for you to purchase and download at your convenience, anywhere you go. For that matter, anywhere in the world. We've got hundreds of offerings, so visit shop.catholic.com today and check out our selection. That's shop.catholic.com.
Man, time flies. 50 years since 1968, Humanae Vitae, one of the most probably important, certainly the most commented upon papal document of the 20th century. And we've got a May-June issue of Catholic Answers magazine entirely dedicated to the 50th anniversary of Blessed Pope Paul VI, Humanae Vitae, with an exploration of the crucial social and theological issues surrounding the encyclical. It's an encyclical, I imagine, that's still in many parts of the Church is still struggling for acceptance, although it's certainly in better shape now than it was 50 years ago as far as the Church's response to it. What's the theological core of the issue of contraception? What are the limits of the document's teaching? What led the Pope to issue the encyclical, and how did the reaction of the Universal Church affect the way we have come to view dissent? So much more. Just don't miss this virtual handbook on the most important aspects of Paul VI's profound and prophetic document. Currently, the magazine is 10 to 20% off the normal subscription, plus you get a free digital subscription when you subscribe. You need to subscribe by the end of March to get signed up. Go to CatholicAnswersMagazine.com to subscribe. And we're really proud of this issue. We're really proud of every issue. Tim Ryland does a great job. But this is an important issue on the 50th anniversary of Humanae Vitae. We hope you can get it into your hands, maybe the hands of your children or in-laws or
It's a message that needs to get out there. Our guest this hour is Colin Donovan, Vice President for Theology at EWTN, the host of the Friday edition of Open Line on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. And our topic, whatever is on your mind about the life and the faith of the Catholic Church. If you have a question about what it is to be Catholic, what it is that Catholics believe, or why it is we believe those things, 888-318-7884. That's 888-31-TRUTH. If you prefer the spelled version, we go now to William in Boston, listening to EWTN on the iHeartRadio app. I didn't know that that was possible, but William, you are on with Colin Donovan. Your question, please.
Greetings, gentlemen, and thank you for taking my call. Can you hear me well?
We can.
Thank you, and thank you for this great ministry, and may God richly bless you, guys. I listen to Open Line all the time, and thank you for what you guys represent for the church. My question is regarding, what some say that the Catholic religion or the Christian religion has its roots in Egyptian, I guess, early Egyptian religions, the concepts of, let's say, the virgin birth, the concept of the Eucharist, the concept of the resurrection. It's as if they're saying that our religion, the Christian, more especially the Catholic religion, is like a copy or we stole most of our main concepts from Egyptian religions, like believing in one God and things like that.
All right. Is Christianity a stolen religion, Colin?
No, not really. There's sometimes only certain ways in which religion can develop, or certain themes which religion develops. Just as in nature, you see, you know, if you look at sports around the world in different primitive cultures, they involve sticks and they involve round things and they do different things with them. But there's a certain similarity there because human beings are similar, and wherever they are there, they generate similar elements of culture and so on, even with all the differences. And so as a creature that is body and soul, man's spirit, his striving for the eternal. We're not eternal, we're immortal, but we have that seed of the eternal in us and we'll live forever. And we're striving to fulfill that part of our nature. And so we find in the pagan cultures, we find the things which suggest that that is done. It can be reincarnation and multiple reincarnations achieving a perfection, as in some of the Eastern philosophies. It can be resurrection and death and resurrection, as you see in some of the myths of different cultures and so on. But these are all coming out of human nature. The Catholic Church didn't invent them. There's human nature striving for its perfection, as God wishes it to. What we have differently with Christianity, of course, is that our story is no myth. We had Christ, who's attested to historically, dying on the cross, rising from the dead. We have the apostles who died that might be believed. We have 20 centuries of continuity. The longest and oldest, longest surviving and oldest institution on the face of the earth. I remember taking an operations management course in my youth in another career, and the professor asked, well, talking about institutions which survive ability, does anyone know which institution has survived the most? And I was the only one who put my hand up, because the answer was the Catholic Church, or you could even say the papacy. This is because there is a sign in that to us, that the Church has perdured precisely because its supernatural founder and supernatural foundation is perdured, and in every generation there are miracles. There are moral miracles, which are even greater than the physical miracles, really, talking about people who from one instant to the next convert from a life of great sin to holiness. So the church has these attestations, but the things that are similar in the Catholic Church and Christianity generally with some of the natural religions only show this, that we believe by faith, not simply by the conviction of our reason, as important as that is. We have to come to faith in Christ, and so the natural arguments are not enough, nor are the natural arguments against any evidence or proof that the faith isn't true. I think there's enough in the faith that people can disprove that its naturality, in other words, that it is only derived from nature, whether some previous religious expression such as the Egyptian or the Mithras or any of those religions of the first century or simply made out of whole cloth by, you know, some Jews who were wandering around in Israel preaching to people. I think the supernaturality of and the spirituality of the Catholic and Christian faith demonstrate its truth, but in the end, it takes faith. It's not enough to have just reason.
William, thank you very, very much for that call. We do appreciate it. I hope that that was helpful to you. We go now to Ken in Omaha, Nebraska, listening on Spirit Catholic Radio, KVSS. Ken, you're on with Colin Donovan. Your question, please.
Hi, gentlemen.
Hi.
What I'd like to ask is, we know that the Eucharist didn't exist until Holy Thursday. But in the Old Testament, they always talked about the bread of the presence.
Mm-hmm.
And what I would like to know what that means in the Old Testament.
Sure, yeah. Well, remember, there are a number of occasions in the Old Testament where bread is used in significant ways. One, of course, is in Abraham's meeting with Melchizedek, who is called a priest of God Most High, and his was an offering of bread and wine. This is a foreshadowing. This is a type of the future religion that God was leading the world to. We see it also in the manna and the fact that the manna provided the Israelites in the desert their sustenance. Again, the manna was a foreshadowing of the supernatural, the spiritual sustenance of the Eucharist. And some of the manna was put in the Holy of Holies, and later on with the temple, the bread that was baked was certain loaves of it were put in the Holy of Holies. That was the bread of the presence because it was in the area where God was, they believed, and where historically, they also had some signs of that presence. They believed that the presence descended on the Ark of the Covenant, on the horns of the Ark, and that this was this had influence on the bread, which only the priest could consume. And so that is again a foreshadowing. It's a looking forward to. It's a prophetic to that degree of the coming of the Holy Eucharist as the one and only sacrifice. And we also see it, of course, in the prophet Malachi in the first chapter where he talks about, among the Gentiles will be, the perpetual sacrifice from sunup to sundown. Just exactly what we see today, that this sacrificial bread, which is the representation of the sacrifice of Christ, occurs everywhere in the world, and it's the only thing which satisfies the justice owes to God because it is Christ himself worshiping the Father in the Holy Spirit. And so all of the covenants of the Old Testament point to and are satisfied completely in the Holy Eucharist because only Christ, the Son of God, can worship the Father perfectly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ken, all right. Very good. Ken.
Yeah, gentlemen, keep up God's good work.
Oh, thank you, Ken. That's very kind words. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with more Colin Donovan. Open forum today on Catholic Answers Live. If you got a question about the Catholic faith, we'd love to talk with you. And you don't have to be Catholic to call 888-318-7884. Be right back with more after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers. Our success depends on you.
Howdy, folks. This is Jimmy Akin, and I have exciting news. Starting this spring, Catholic Answers Live will begin appearing weekly on EWTN television. What's more, you'll be able to watch it no matter where you are, from Catholic.com, using your computer, phone, tablet, smart TV, or other device. Catholic Answers' mission is to use every means we can to reach people with the message of Christ and His Church, and this will be our first weekly television program. That's why we need your help right now. Producing a quality professional television show is not cheap, and it can only happen with the generous support of donors like you. To make your donation and get a free copy of the videos, visit Catholic.com and click the Catholic Answers television banner, or call us toll free at 888-291-8000. That's the Catholic Answers television banner at Catholic.com, or call toll free 888-291-8000.
This year's Catholic Answers National Apologetics Conference is proud to announce our very special keynote speaker, Raymond Leo Cardinal Burke. Do you have your tickets? Early bird pricing ends July 2nd. Seats are still available, but they're going fast. Visit CatholicAnswersConference.com or call 1-888-291-8000 today to register.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their Catholic values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
Do you love praying for people? Have you ever wanted to use your gift of prayer to share Jesus with others and build up the body of Christ? Start a public prayer station with St. Paul Street Evangelization. Listen to people's needs, pray with them, or invite them to meet you at church. St. Paul Street Evangelization can help you get started. Find out how at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Call now with your question. 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Open forum today, both hours. If you got a question about the Catholic faith, we're here to give you the best possible answer we can. 888-318-7884. 888-318-7884. Colin Donovan, our guest, is the Vice President for Theology at the Eternal Word Television Network, better known as EWTN. And we go now to Kathy in Oklahoma City, listening on Oklahoma Catholic Radio. Kathy, your question for Colin.
My question is, what is the Church's current teaching on Marian consecration, and what are some of the benefits of doing it?
Okay. Different names are used by different individual. Consecration, entrustment is one that's used. I think even Pope John Paul started using that. The idea, if you think of what the most basic consecration that we do in the Church is, it's baptism, where we dedicate ourselves to Christ and we turn over ourselves to the worship of God in and through Christ. And all of the consecrations take part in that. Ones which are universal tend to be those who have universal offices in the Church. So you can talk about a consecration to Mary. There are consecrations to the angels, St. Michael, because they have universal roles. There may be some particular ones to patron saints and so on, but they tend to be the kind which represent a total surrender to God under the patronage of a particular person. And this is certainly the case with Our Lady. Now, the only difference with her, and it's quite a difference actually, is that as we learn through the message of Fatima, both the apparitions themselves and the appearances of Our Lord and Our Lady to Sister Lucia in the years afterwards, it's God's desire that the Church give full recognition to Mary's salvific role and to put devotion to her Immaculate Heart alongside of her Sacred Heart. So the Church is, as you say, building towards that. And we each build towards this full justice that is owed to Our Lady and her fiat, her yes, when we make a consecration to her, when we do, which is one of the elements of the message of Fatima, by the way, to be consecrated to her, wear her scapular, say the rosary daily, do penance in reparation for sinners, and especially the five first Saturday in reparation for sins against against Our Lady under her Marian dogmas and titles. So we do that by certainly by consecrating ourselves and saying we take Mary as the person most suited to lead us to her Son and the fulfillment of the kingdom, first in ourselves and then in society and in God's good time, the entire world at the second coming. So this is a very important thing. Now, there are different ways of making that consecration to Our Lady. The most common one is St. Louis de Montfort and his True Devotion. Highly recommend that to everyone. There's a period of preparation ending on March 25th. We're sort of down into the last period of that, but you could, you know, look at True Devotion and make that on the 25th, or pick another Marian feast day as people do to sort of prepare. It's not a badge, it's not a membership, and so there should be that spiritual preparation that we really understand what it is we're doing, who it is we're committing to, and that we wish to go to Jesus through Mary, and to do as Pope John Paul II did, totus tuus, all for you, everything yours, and we give that into her hands. Because if you think about it, God the Father gave into the hands of this Jewish woman the salvation of the world. I think we're pretty safe in trusting her with our own particular salvation. So it's a good thing to do, and we should do it, and the more people who do it, the more likely the triumph of the Immaculate Heart promised at Fatima will come about. So I highly encourage you and the rest of our listeners to do a proper preparation and to make that consecration to the Immaculate Heart, particularly under that title.
Is that something you're thinking about doing, Kathy?
Yes, it is. I've been looking at it for some time, pondering it, and just wanted to get some more answers, and I really appreciate it. You answered my question.
Great, Kathy. Very good. Another satisfied customer. That happens a lot when Colin Donovan is on. 888-318-7884 is our number. Let's go to Francis in Detroit, Michigan, listening on Ave Maria Radio. Francis, you are on with Colin Donovan. Your question, please.
Thank you. Thank you for being there. I'm a Catholic, mm-hmm. But I have, especially lately, been concerned with the term in the Our Father that thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems that it wasn't always God's will done in heaven. That's why we have Lucifer,
mm-hmm.
and the fallen angels. He was the chief of the angels, in my understanding, Lucifer, the one who bore the light. Now, why, if the will wasn't done in heaven always, why do we say it is? I know it is now, but are we secure for the future that the will mm-hmm. of God will not someday be not done in heaven as it wasn't before?
Okay. This is a bit of a terminological problem and not a theological one, although they cross paths, you would say. The heaven in which the angels were created was, of course, creaturely, because they are creatures. They need creaturely state. And so the heaven referred to when we talk about Satan disobeying, or we say, well, you know, he said to God, I will not serve. We're talking about not the heaven, not the presence of God, not the beatific vision of God. That is heaven in the strict sense, the heaven of the blessed. So this was the angelic heaven in which all the angels were created. It was their state of probation as the garden was man's state of probation. And one said, no, I will not serve, and took a third of the angels with him, based on the third that the dragon sweeps from the sky in the book of Revelation chapter 12. And the others said yes and were admitted to the beatific vision. And from that point, for all eternity, they see God in their spirits, as we will in heaven see God in our souls, that intellectual vision of God, and know him as he is. So that it's not the same heaven. When Jesus, and I love that scene in, I think it's in King of Kings, where Jesus is asked, teach us to pray, and he starts to teach them. When Jesus says, "Be it, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven," who is in heaven then? Only the angels, the good angels.
Oh, yeah.
If we have the obedience of the angels, this is what we're called to do. When Jesus said that, only the angels were in heaven. So we should aspire to the obedience and the promptness of will that the angels exhibited from that very first moment that they said yes to God. And so that is what that prayer is saying. And, of course, it's also saying that it would be extended here onto earth. Frankly, in this temporal order in which we live, this veil of tears, we're not going to see that. But at least in our own hearts, we can strive to do the Lord's will on earth as it is in heaven, now by angels and human beings as well. But when he taught them that prayer, it was only the angels.
Francis, thank you so much. I'm going to move because I think we can get another call in before the top of the hour. Second hour, if you're on the line, stay on the line because Tim Staples is coming in to take calls. And we would love to get to your call. If you haven't called yet, 888-31-TRUTH is the number. Let's go to Brandon in Houston, Texas, listening on the Catholic Answers Live app. Brandon, your question for Colin Donovan, please.
Hi, how's it going?
Good, thank you, Brandon.
Welcome.
Okay, my question was in regards to the Gospel of Matthew, particularly in chapter 5, verses 17 to 19. I guess my question was really, like, what was the meaning of it, and, like, how is that something that we can apply to our lives as Catholics?
Okay. That's a very good question. We have to remember the order of things when Christ came into the world under the Old Covenant. There wasn't quite a canon such as we have today, where the church certifies certain books are to be considered sacred scripture. But there was certainly a sense, in fact, several senses. In Alexandria, they had one view. In Israel, a different. In Babylon, where Jews still had remained since the exile, they had different traditions. But they were all in agreement on this, that the law, the Torah, the five books of Moses, and the prophetic books, the books that tell us the prophecies of Isaiah and Jeremiah and so on and so forth, that these were scripture. They were read in the synagogue. They were read from in the parts that were done in the temple services, the morning and evening sacrifice, and what the Levites did in leading the people. And prayer and so on. So these parts of what we would call just the scriptures, and the two major parts of the Tanakh, what the Jewish scriptures are called. What Jesus is saying is he's not come to overthrow that; he's come to fulfill it. That these were shadows that pointed to a greater reality. So you take all of the disciplinary rules of the old law, which establish an order of justice in the cultic practices in the temple, in the moral law, even in the bathing regulations for women or for the priests. All of these things are disciplinary. They're meant to train to understand the holiness of divine things, the holiness of the body, the punishment due to violations of that, so on, disciplinary. And St. Paul would make that point in his writings. What Christ came to bring is charity, and what he didn't do is overthrow all of that, but he showed that justice is perfected in charity. So those forms of those old covenantal practices may be gone, but we have new forms, and charity is the form of all that we do, and we should try to bring charity into all that we do. And the church gives us ways of doing that in the liturgy and the sacraments and the prayer life and so on.
Brandon, thank you very much for that call. Again, if you're on the line, stay on the line. Tim Staples will be here in a few minutes to take calls. Colin Donovan, Vice President for Theology at EWTN, thank you so much for a very fine hour.
Thank you, Si. Always glad to be here.
And thanks for the tip on where to go if we end up in Rome, where we can go get a good dinner. 888-31-TRUTH is our number here, 888-318-7884. If you are a Catholic, you are welcome to call. If you are not a Catholic, you are welcome to call. If you can figure out some third alternative, you're welcome to call as well. Open forum means any question from anyone on the life, the faith, the history of the Catholic Church. Right back with more of that after this on Catholic Answers Live.